A Breakfast Huddle with Elliot Danker, Yasmin Yonkers, and Ryan Hwan. Replay from Money FM 89.3.
The UK economy would be 4% smaller after 10 years under British Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit plan.
You know, really? That? Who's saying
been,
this?
I've just been fed this information. According to research by an independent think tank, and this is the first proper economic analysis of the Brexit deal agreed between the UK and the EU and signed off, of course, at the Brussels Summit,
on
right?
Sunday, okay. Yeah, yeah. But to say that the UK economy would be 4% smaller after 10 years under Mrs. May's Brexit plan, this comes, like you say, as an independent study. But the study was commissioned by a group of naysayers. These are the ones who want a second referendum. Okay. The group is called the People's Vote. So apparently this is like the people's voice coming up with these numbers. You know what I mean?
Okay.
We want our next guest to actually weigh in on this. But before we do that, let's do a recap of what happened on Sunday. After 20 months of back and forth, EU leaders have finally agreed on the UK's Brexit deal. The president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, he said it was a sad day. He talked like it was post-divorce. He said no one should be raising champagne glasses at the prospect of the UK leaving the EU.
And since the announcement of the agreement, both the pound and the euro ticked higher. This agreement, of course, it's not the end. The deal still needs to be approved by the UK Parliament. That's expected to take place on the 12th of December.
Okay. We want to say good morning to our guest who will possibly give us more insight for sure. And he's been keeping an eye on this. Jeff Ng, a good friend of ours, Chief Economist of Asia at Continuum Economics. Jeff, thank you for being back here again.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. So, divorce deal, never nice, right? Always nasty. What are some of your key takeaways? Let's start with the broad strokes on this divorce deal.
Yeah, I think as you mentioned, I think the still big takeaway is that they finally agreed with the EU, the UK, you know, in terms of some of the details on the deal. There's still others that's still very sketchy as well. But at least there's a draft agreement that has been agreed. I think now the key takeaway for me, at least on the official basis, is that now Prime Minister May still has to go back to her UK Parliament and try to convince them to move through, because if that doesn't move through, there's going to be even more uncertainty on how the divorce deal will be. And personally for me, I think it's I really feel that this has been a long journey, so happy to at least see some progress in it and some certainty, but then I still don't see the end of the road. I think there's still going to be some you know, twists and turns along the way.
20 months of back and forth, Elliot.
There are four steps to this, four generic steps to it. First, you get approval from the UK Cabinet.
Yeah.
Then you go through the EU Summit, which just happened on Sunday. After that, it's the House of Commons, UK Parliament, right? Mm-hmm. And then finally, the European Parliament.
Gosh.
And even then, we still don't know. Anything can happen between now and then. But, you know, Mrs. May has said that although the deal involved compromises, it was a good deal that unlocks a bright future for the UK. Jeff, what do you think she was referring to when she says it unlocks a bright future for the UK?
Yeah, I think she's referring to a bit more of the withdrawal draft agreement, where I think, you know, looking at it, at least there's a timeline for the UK to withdraw from the EU on March 29, 2019, and having a long, you know, transition period for UK as well as EU before the full kind of divorce takes away as well. So I think, of course, there's still some positives and negative impact that we should explore a bit later. And there's possibly like what the previous study has mentioned as well, some possibly negative economic impact on UK, but there could be some green shoots too.
Drawing back to her statement, she says the deal involved compromises. And for someone who's not totally plugged into this whole Brexit negotiations, could you share with us some of the compromises that had to be made and how that could be seen as perhaps good for the UK?
Yeah, I think one compromise will be, you know, the financial settlement. The UK has to pay, you know, £39 billion to EU. I think that's the huge amount.
Yeah.
And,
but that's to be paid in a staggered fashion, and that may not even be the final divorce bill.
Yes. So I think that is, I think, one area where a lot of the British, you know, citizens as well as company will face, because that's going to be a tax on the ordinary citizens, on, you know, the people who has to, you know, foot all this kind of bill.
Mm.
Okay, all right. Let's talk about negative somewhat now. Mm. The Foreign Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, he says this deal would mitigate most of the negative economic impacts. So you said we're going to explore positives and negatives a little later. Now's the time, Jeff. What are some of the negative economic impacts of Brexit?
Yeah, I think for me, number one will be the uncertainty, because when businesses and individuals, they do not know the full extent on how the separation will go through, I think that there's going to be a lot of uncertainty. And I think that for this kind of deal, there's four aspects. One is on the goods part, you know, how are goods going to be transacted between the two blocks, capital flows, you know, services, and as well as the people as well. I think the good part is that, you know, this WDA, the withdrawal draft plan, I think do give a long transition period of 21 months for businesses, more time, you know, to figure out all this before, you know, the actual withdrawal. So I think that is at least some mitigating factors for this negative impact. And of course, with all these disruptions, there'll be increased legislation as well. So I think that's another negative impact.
When we talk about negative, I'm just going to throw some numbers at you. Numbers from first quarter of this year, UK economy between 1 to 1.5% smaller than it would have been without the Brexit vote. Anything worrying there?
I think it's still relatively within the range because the whole economy for UK has been pretty much supported by the services sector. And overall, I think this year, the global economic backdrop is still pretty steady, which is why Bank of England continues to look a little bit towards tightening its monetary policy. But of course, I think going forward, especially when the whole world economy is not doing so well, if the growth starts to mature by 2020, then there's definitely going to be some negative spillovers to the UK economy.
We're discussing Brexit's impact on markets and businesses. Helping us this morning is Jeff Ng, Chief Economist, Asia Continuum Economics. Jeff, this next question could impact people perhaps hoping to seek work in the UK, or people like me who are very concerned about their football team. The agreement is set to end freedom of movement. How is this going to impact things like talent or employment in the UK and perhaps in relation to the EU member states as well? How does it impact?
Yeah, so I think it's going to impact by having more legislation. So you need to get your visas, you need to get your permits, and you need a lot of approvals in order to work or live in the UK, and I think vice versa as well for UK citizens who want to work and live in EU. I think they definitely have to face more of this kind of applications and approvals. And I mean, if you want to look at things from a football analogy, I think there could be more criteria, I think,
for foreign players.
Yes. So perhaps a quota on the amount of foreign players in a soccer team. So I think that could apply to companies as well. So so I think still nothing is set in stone, but we could see, I think, some of this being implemented.
Okay, wow, that's a scary thought, because you make me and this is just off the top of the head, I know my opinion that we would probably see a lot more British people going back where employment is concerned. Lesser foreign talent coming in, perhaps. It's a possibility?
Yeah.
Because it could be a revival of the domestic talent pool.
Something like that. That's what I mean.
Yes. And I think in a world where I think things are getting interconnected, in the financial sector, for instance, I think, having a lot of companies now thinking of, if they want to be in Europe, they can't base their headquarters in the UK, for instance. So, looking at other financial centres such as Frankfurt or, looking at some other cities like Paris to base their headquarters.
Okay.
So, I think that could also be some duplication as well. So having businesses have two separate offices for one for UK, one for Europe, instead of one for the whole region itself.
Big impact there. I know. So Jeff, let's get back to Brexit. There would be tariffs between the EU and the UK when Brexit kicks in March next year. What sectors would benefit most from post-Brexit?
Yeah, I think top of what comes to mind will be, those legal sectors, where they have to now help out with companies to figure out, what's the new laws, new rules, which tariffs, and how do they, navigate the uncertainty across. So I think that sector, I think, definitely, seeming to have some positives. I think another that comes into mind could be, financial sector, where I think there's going to be more hedging or a lot of companies looking at, you know, how are they going to better manage their finances now that, you know, things look still very uncertain between, you know, the relations and the final kind of agreement between the UK and the EU.
It sounds to me like these are the more consultative sectors to help the transition. These are the ones that are going to have an uptick.
That's right. I think if you look at most other sectors, yeah, the common man, I think they will be reeling from the higher tariffs and the higher prices.
Yeah. It hurts to know you might have to foot the bill, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know, we talked about this at the start, how the UK Parliament needs to vote on this. December 12th is the date, and I swear I've said December 12th so many times, I'm going to mistake this for my sister's birthday. That's on the 18th of December.
No, please don't.
Please don't, Elliot. Jeff, how will this affect the pound if, hypothetically, the UK Parliament rejects this bill, this deal, rather? What are some of the setbacks? What's going to happen in such a scenario?
Yeah, I think a lot of this impact short-term-wise is going to be very market-driven.
Okay.
So I think like a lot of the recent recovery of the pound as well as some of the equity indices in the UK, that's been supported by at least, you know, some, you know, progress in the Brexit deal, at least having this being approved and expectations of it going forward. So if this becomes disorderly, because there's going to be more uncertainty, there could be, you know, several ways this uncertainty could turn out. One is that Prime Minister May could resign and then they could elect a new Prime Minister, and the deadline towards you know, May 2019 is already you know, just 3-4 more months down the road. If they don't settle anything by then, there's going to be, you know, more uncertainty, and that's going to cause the pound, the equity markets to fall as well. And it might also impact on some other like policy, like monetary policy. You know, right. Bank of England has been looking to normalize its policy rate along with other advanced economies like the US. So if they, you know, have this kind of headwinds, uncertainty, I don't think they will, you know, do so.
So if this deal doesn't go through, the reality is we could see the pound drop.
Absolutely.
And holiday opportunity, just saying. No, but that's if. That's
hey,
if. That's
hey,
if.
Okay? Think of people who have
that's
property,
sorry,
okay?
Sorry.
In the UK, it's not going to make them very happy. Listen, the EU is Singapore's third largest trading partner, Jeff. They're also the biggest investor into ASEAN since 2010. They represent 20% of all foreign direct investment that flows into the region. Can you, and we've had many people weigh in on this from British High Commissioner, now we need to ask you, how will Brexit affect Singapore's trade with the EU, and then even comments, you know, with the UK, if you have?
Yeah, I think in terms of overall Singapore trade, impact is not that great. Singapore trade has evolved to become very diversified. So firstly, being strong trade partners with other advanced economies like the US, and over the last 20 years as well, I think intra-Asia trade has also intensified. Singapore trade has been transitioning towards being the hub of intra-Asia trade. So in terms of you know, direct impact with the EU and the UK, I think it's minute. I think more of a perhaps uncertainty will be because Singapore has been trying to negotiate this FTA with the EU. So now with the UK out of the picture, I think they will have to, you know, do its own negotiation with the UK, because now it finds itself, you know, with one member short, and if they want to have extend the kind of cooperation and continue to remain trade open and diversify, I think they do have to explore the kind of you know, trading partners as well, so that including the UK. So if they want to, you know, continue to have strong trading ties with the UK, I think they do need to explore, for instance, that option.
But, you know, off the back of that, you know, knowing Brexit was always going to happen, some good news was that Singapore did sign the EU-Singapore FTA.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, applying this to businesses, Singapore businesses, Jeff, what would you say Singapore businesses should do if, say, right now they're planning to venture into the UK, or, you know, even Singapore investors want to venture there into the UK?
Yeah, I would say, I think, continue to watch the news and continue to look at the developments. I think overall, the UK economy, I think, still will continue to be very much services-oriented post-Brexit. It will still remain, I think, a huge financial hub. And I think there's still opportunities in UK despite you know, this trajectory, and I think concerns of a slower growth trajectory for the UK going forward. But I think I'll of course watch out for the legislation. As I mentioned earlier, I think some of the sectors, like the legislation sectors, will certainly benefit, because you do have to look at all the different rules and regulations very carefully, because they may not be set in stone, or there may be many points that are being unclear at the moment. And I think going forward, I don't see all of these points being eliminated totally. So there'll still be a lot of points that are not clear or they're not ratified yet.
Could be a bit of a teething period where legislation is concerned. Mm. So perhaps pay more attention.
Okay. Final question for our guest, Jeff Ng from Continuum Economics. I know you talked about the pound earlier. Just keeping an eye on it, the pound and the euro, they picked up yesterday after the success of the Brexit deal among the EU leaders. Jeff, can you weigh in on what you're expecting on these currencies in the next few months, perhaps what the market's pricing in?
Yeah, so I think overall, we are overall expecting, you know, some dollar weaknesses heading into, you know, the middle of next year. I think for now, I think dollar still remains pretty strong until mid next year. And then thereafter, we're expecting some softness by the end of 2019. So I think, you know, in terms of the different currencies, we will still a little bit favor, I think, some of the other emerging market currencies going forward. And this could mean that I think if a lot of this uncertainty remains, they can still dampen on the pound as well as the euro. I think the euro-wise, I will not be so bothered in terms of how Brexit performs. I think for now, the biggest kind of driver for the euro for next year will still be on how they are exiting the asset purchase program. Okay. It's supposed to end by end of this year. And then for next year, I think whether they are going to raise their interest rate and you know, continue with the trajectory, like for instance, the US has been doing a few years ago. So any increase in rates, the first one or two increases, usually has a very big impact on the euro. So that could drive the euro compared to Brexit. For the pound, of course, I think that will be very much tied to the Brexit developments. I think for now, I think the muddle through scenario, I think still necessitates a slow decline in the pound. So I think good news for us who wants to go to the UK to travel. But then if things progress a bit faster and people start to agree, which still is unlikely at the moment, the pound could actually start to show some strength going forward. So I think it's still very mixed between the euro and pound, but we are not that, you know, kind of favourable, especially on the pound.
Everything looking mixed, but I suppose time will solve everything. Well, we've been talking about Brexit's impact on markets and businesses, and perhaps Brexit's impact on you. Thank you very much for helping us out this morning. Jeff Ng, Chief Economist Asia, Continuum Economics.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.